Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Committee on Labor and Consumer Protection to order. We've got one bill on the agenda today, and several of the rural members have pointed out that it's snowing out there. So we can all keep that in mind. I would, when we met before session jointly with the Housing and Public Health Committee at that point, I did welcome Representative Loon to the committee. I don't know that everyone was present, so did want to welcome you again. Representative Loon is taking Representative Zeller's spot on the committee. He's found other activities that will keep him more than busy, I would imagine. So again, welcome.
Thank you.
With the beginning of the new session, we have new staff, in particular two new pages. Guys, if you want to stand up for a second and wave, we have Michael Bain, do I have that right? And Travis Wasiluk.
Yep.
Wasiluk, excuse me.
Wasiluk.
Yep.
Okay, they didn't know what page it was.
Okay, all right. Welcome and thanks for your assistance this session, folks. As I indicated, we have one bill on the agenda today. Representative Lanning, if you'd like to come up. Members who were on the committee previously will recognize this as the Ladder Out of Poverty bill that came out of the work that Representative Lanning helped lead, as along with many others, in the effort to end poverty in Minnesota by 2020. We heard an earlier version of this bill after final deadlines last the 2009 session. So while there are some meaningful differences to it, I think the general outline and the supporters who will be testifying will be familiar to folks. At this point, Representative Murdoch, would you like to move House File 2062 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor?
Yes, I would.
Thank you very much, Representative Murdoch. Representative Lanning, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members, and good morning to all of you. We have a DE amendment, delete everything amendment, DE4, that we would ask that you pass that, act on that, since that is the version that we would like to move forward with.
Certainly. Representative Murdoch moves the DE4 amendment to be before the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Lanning, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this bill, DE4, when we had an informal meeting with you back at the end of 2009 session, it was DE3. There have been a couple of other minor changes that we've made since that time, and I'll talk about the bill in a moment here. But this legislation is attempting to follow up on the commission to end poverty by the year 2020. In 2006, we in the legislature passed legislation to establish this commission to study the issue of what can we do to not only reduce poverty, but actually eliminate poverty in Minnesota by 2020. And this bill was passed in a bipartisan way by the Republican majority in the House and the Democratic majority in the Senate, and signed by the governor. And for 2 years, we had 9 members of the House, 9 members of the Senate, equal participation from both sides of the aisle, that went to work and developing this study and report. The report was fully released last January of 2009, and I think maybe many of you have received your copy along the way. This is what it looks like. And what this bill is attempting to do is to take some of the key recommendations of this commission report and take us to the next level of trying to make some things happen towards that overall goal. And so for over 2 years, we as members of the commission, and I represented the House on the commission and was also on the executive committee for the commission that was chaired by Representative Mariani and Senator Marty. And for 2 years, we traveled the state. We talked to people here in St. Paul and all over Minnesota, people who are currently living in poverty, people who were working for and on behalf of people living in poverty, advocates, and interested citizens. And we learned a lot. I found that to be an invaluable experience, talking with all kinds of people and examining what can we do as a state to achieve this goal. Let me just mention a few of the things we learned. The first thing we learned was the need for public awareness. You know, unless if you're not living in poverty, maybe you don't really understand how poverty can affect you as an individual. And we learned that it's very important for the public to understand that poverty is costly for this state. It's costly because of lost human productivity, lost participation in our society for those who are unable to work, unable to get a job. And we need to do something to address that issue very, very clearly. We also learned that as we went around the state, one of the things we often heard from people is people who are living in poverty, they said, we want a hand up, not a hand out. They want us to help them move or work their way out of poverty. And I think that's an important lesson that we learned. We also learned that there's a great need for financial literacy. We were astounded to hear stories and reports of how people simply didn't have even the basic information about what they needed to know about financing various endeavors and just the basics in terms of financial literacy. We also discovered lots of barriers or things that got in the way to creating an inability for people to maintain and accumulate assets. And unless you can maintain and accumulate assets, it's virtually impossible to work your way out of poverty. And so we discovered many things that kind of serve as barriers or obstacles to help people work their way out of poverty. One other thing I want to share that we learned was the value of community engagement. This was very encouraging to me as we traveled the state, where you saw citizens, not just advocates, but citizens getting involved, trying to help people work their way out of poverty, providing mentoring, providing support, encouragement, whatever the case might be. And that is something that we found very, very important. We need to do more to engage the private sector, the faith community, communities, all of various sectors of community in trying to address this problem. So those are just some of the things that we learned along the way. And what this bill, Ladder Out of Poverty Bill 2062 with the amendment, it addresses really three of the six main recommendations of the commission report. The first overall challenge or goal that we had in the commission report was to help Minnesotans build and maintain financial assets. And this is all about trying to improve financial literacy, trying to enhance things like the FAME program, the individual development accounts that have proven to be successful in Minnesota, to also address the predatory lending practices, which we found really disgraceful, some of the things that we learned about what's going on out there that really get in the way of people being able to maintain and build assets. The second main goal of the commission report that this legislation addresses is revitalizing our communities through infrastructure and person-to-person support. And that's where we are concerned about the community engagement, the civic engagement that hopefully we're able to bring about in our state in more than ways than we are now. And then finally, one of the other six original goals of the report was to develop an ongoing structure to monitor Minnesota's efforts to end poverty. As you know, it's one thing to have a good report. If it sits on the shelf and nothing is done with it, we've wasted some money. And we've also disappointed people who are looking for action, looking for some means of implementing those kinds of recommendations. And so those are three of the main goals of the report that this legislation addresses. If you take a look at the DE4 amendment, let me just highlight a couple of things. The purpose of this legislation is to help people accumulate and maintain assets, to ban predatory financial practices, to increase financial literacy, and to build on the strategies that were set forth by the Legislative Commission to end poverty. And what we're proposing is the formation of a task force that would be composed of four senators, two from the majority, two from the minority, four members of the House, two from the majority, two from the minority. And they would be joined by the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce or his or her designee, and the same for the attorney general and his or her designee. And they would be also charged with bringing into their task force representatives of a whole host of organizations and groups that are concerned about the issue of poverty, working to address the issue of poverty. And they're not official members of the task force under this legislation, but it's made very clear that the task force needs to consult and bring those people in. And then in terms of what the task force should be doing, there are six actions that they're expected to do under this legislation to increase opportunities for individuals to acquire assets and create and build wealth, to expand a program like the FAME program, to reduce or eliminate predatory financial practices, to provide incentives or assistance to private sector financial institutions, to help them offer different and better alternatives for people as they conduct their financial affairs, and to provide financial literacy information to low-income families, and to advance the whole cause of civic engagement, community engagement. This group, the task force, is set for the next 2+ years if it's passed, and it would sunset in 2 years. And the members would select their own chair or co-chairs. They would not be compensated for their participation. So it would be a voluntary experience for the legislators who would be appointed to this. And the reason for that is that we don't think there's any financial impact here at all. This will cost zero. And we've structured this so it would not have a cost impact. And we would be looking towards soliciting donations from a variety of folks, and that this bill authorizes that money to be received and spent for various purposes corresponding with the responsibilities of this group. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members, we have, I think you have before you a list of all of the organizations who have officially signed on in support of this legislation. We are very appreciative of that long list of supporters. And now I know you have the names of several people who would like to be able to testify with regard to this bill.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Lanning. First testifier on the list is Ms. Kim Schaff. Schaff, my apologies. While she's coming up, just Representative Lanning, to follow up on the last point regarding cost to the state.
Yes.
Representative Solberg, in his role as chair of Ways and Means, has pointed out there will need to be a fiscal note, and he has requested that his staff put that process into place. The expectation is it'll be zero,
Yeah. But
that still establishes the paper trail we need. Please.
I certainly understand, Mr. Chairman. And
let's see if I can get it right this time. Ms. Schaff?
Schaff.
I couldn't.
It's misspelled on there.
Oh, well, thank you. That's in my defense. Ms. Schaff, welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself for the tape, as if you haven't done it enough already, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak on House File 2062, establishing the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force. My name is Kim Schaff, and I'm a FAME coordinator at Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties. Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County serves approximately 17,000 people, households annually, through weatherization, Head Start, energy assistance, and self-sufficiency programming. I'm here today not only representing Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties, but also representing the statewide Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, otherwise known as FAME. FAME is delivered by a statewide 28-site collaborative consisting of 23 Minnesota Community Action Agencies, Women Venture, City-County Federal Credit Union in partnership with Emerge, Leech Lake, and Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Tribal Communities. FAME is a match savings program that helps low-income wage earners acquire assets, either through first-time home buyers, post-secondary education, or small business development. In order to be eligible for the FAME program, households must have an income at or below 200% of poverty and liquid assets at $10,000 or less. FAME account holder savings must come from earned income. Therefore, they must be working. Account holders receive a 3-to-1 match on their earned income, so every dollar they save, FAME matches with $3 to be used towards the purchase of their chosen asset. FAME's success in helping people move towards greater economic stability while saving for an asset is in large part due to financial education classes and one-to-one coaching that participants received. This is where they learn how to save, address and reduce debt, understand the importance of fixing and protecting their credit, as well as becoming conscious consumers. All FAME participants are required to attend 12 hours of financial literacy education, and we use the curriculum Four Cornerstones of Financial Literacy. The four cornerstones include budgeting to create savings, debt reduction and asset building, building a good credit score, and consumer protection and financial institutions. FAME coaching is aimed at helping participants address their financial barriers. For instance, what is holding them back from lifting themselves out of poverty? Each participant may have a different economic empowerment goal while in the FAME, or maybe even several. Such goals may include paying down debt with a long-term goal of being debt-free, increasing credit scores, creating a budget to reduce excess spending, or creating and maintaining a budget that allows for savings. So how do we help as far as FAME in each asset? As far as post-secondary education, in most cases, we're helping people whom are receiving financial aid, but that it doesn't cover the whole cost of tuition and books. The cost that FAME helps pay saves out-of-pocket expenses, thus allowing the student to continue school without incurring further debt. As far as home ownership, FAME money can be used towards down payment, closing costs, or in some cases to pay down principal. If people are interested in purchasing a home, they must be committed to working on and assuring that their debt is reduced and their credit is good by the two-year time limit of FAME. Some participants must also be committed to increasing their income. As far as small business, the money can be used to start a new small business or improve or build on an existing business. Some examples that I have personally, I've worked with a couple who've used the money to remodel for an in-home daycare, to remove mold in the bathroom and provide a safer outdoor play area. Another participant used the money with an existing interpreting business, increasing marketing in hopes to sustain and increase their business through a suffering economy. Some of the results, and these are since 2000. Since 2000, FAME participants have saved a total of over $2 million. They've purchased over 1,400 assets, and approximately 2,800 FAME participants have attended the 12 hours of financial education. Currently, there are 626 open FAME accounts. And through the combination of financial education, one-to-one coaching, and the opportunity to build assets, FAME provides people with lifetime skills, knowledge, and tools to help them work their way out of poverty. And also I have someone with me today who is a FAME participant. It's in addition, we didn't get her name on the, so I apologize. Her name is Laura Hodges, and I'll have her introduce herself in a minute. She was actually the recipient of our 2009 FAME Savers Award last year in education. So I'll have her introduce herself, and thank you.
Ms. Hodges, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, Committee. My name is Laura Hodges. I am a FAME participant. My savings goal was education. I was... In 2003, I had finished my associate's, but did not have the financial support to continue to a bachelor's. Through the FAME program, I was able to meet those, to save that money and not incur further student loan debt. Having my bachelor's degree was going to be able to make me more competitive in a career of my choice for a higher living wage. The FAME staff, what I really liked about this program, but they didn't just say, you know, here's $3 for every $1, now go and figure this out yourself. Kim sat down with me, she went over my budget, she pulled my credit report. Even after I finished the 12 hours of education from the Four Cornerstones, we continued to look at my budget. And I really, it helped change some mindset, and I was able to look at a long-term goal, reduce my debt. I'm now very aware of where my credit stands. I pull it on a yearly basis. And let's see, other impacts on my life from FAME is that last May 2009, I was able to graduate with my bachelor's degree. And I was a first-generation college student, and my 17-year-old, my 2-year-old got to watch their mom graduate. So it's really changed my life. Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Hodges. I think we're developing a greater appreciation for the challenge for first-generation college students, and that it's an intimidating process to get in and figure out financial aid and direction and all that stuff. And we're bringing resources increasingly to assist folks like yourself. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it, unless you have questions.
Questions from the committee? Representative Mack.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I just had a quick question. You mentioned that to get the match, participants have to prove a commitment to a few different things. One of them was a commitment to increase their income. With a few of those different qualifiers, how do you measure that? Is it the relationship between the person kind of counseling the member and how that works, or is there actually something that has to be proven? How is that commitment measured?
Ms. Shaw.
It's really measured as a one-to-one. The one-to-one coaching is what's huge in this. And really the main focus of the increasing income is home ownership and the ability to get a loan at the end of the 2-year program. And so if they have a really low income coming in, then we're very honest about where they need to be able to get that mortgage at the end. So it's the one-on-one monthly coaching, resources as far as helping them maybe find a better job or resume writing or things like that. So it's really measured on one-to-one coaching over time.
All right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Next testifier is Professor Trish Olson from the University of Minnesota. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you for the invitation. It's very nice to be here.
Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Patricia Olson, and I work for the University of Minnesota Extension. And I think I'm here representing three roles. I supervise a team of educators who conduct financial management throughout the state. I'm a researcher at the university around personal financial issues. Some of the research projects I'm working on are the impact of disaster. We did a research project down in Rushford on the impact of the flood on families' personal finance. We also work with new immigrants in understanding as they navigate the system of personal finance. And also we have a new project on the feasibility of a program that we have in personal finance. So I have a little bit of experience. So, and then I'm also a co-leader with a number of the people here in this room in a network called the Minnesota Financial Fitness Network. I think one assumption as we come to this table in setting up a network is there's an assumption that personal finance education works. And I think that's good to that should not necessarily be the role of the task force, because there's a wealth of information that shows that it does work. And I'm just going to share a few studies to say that the effectiveness of financial education has been proven. As we just heard from the example of Minnesota FAME and from one participant, you heard about one example of how financial education can make a large impact. But as decision makers, you want to kind of know the big picture. What do we know nationally? What's been done by large studies? And I'll just give you a short snapshot of that. A study conducted by the Federal Reserve Board found that greater knowledge, and it was a study of a national study with national representation, that greater knowledge about credit, savings, and investment did equate to greater participation in good financial practices, so that people had cash flow. And you think, well, what's cash flow? Well, that's simply meaning that they pay bills on time and they actually have a little bit of money left at the end of the month. Which, what a concept. You know, sometimes we wish our children or our parents or others understood that. But knowledge did equate into better cash flow and to credit management. Another study conducted by our own University of Minnesota, Dr. Sharon Danis, of how youth learned with a youth curriculum, showed that knowledge again was essential in what the outcomes were. That knowledge showed that the youth that had that education did save more, and most importantly, they had confidence in what they did. Confidence in financial management leads us to not be the victim of predatory practices. Another study that was conducted showed that when knowledge was gained, it led to behavior, and then in turn to the outcomes that we're looking for, such as positive credit use. An interesting turn in our field of the study of financial literacy is that in the workplace. We understand that workers, employers, are the engine, the basis of our financial system. As employers provided information to their employees about financial literacy, the outcome was greater than just having more money in the bank. There was less absenteeism. They were healthier. They were more productive. Think about folks who might every 30 minutes think they have to check their bank balance to see if something had crossed or passed. It's an awful way to work. And so folks who had the financial literacy were better workers. And that's fascinating learning for us, that the financial education goes beyond the money in the bank. If you think historically, it used to be that if you had money, you bought things, or you could barter. But really, there was nothing beyond that. There was no opportunity to spend beyond what you had. As our industry, or as the economic environment has changed with the opportunity for credit, the complexities of making financial decisions to spend beyond what you make are now the crux of what people are challenged with today. So now let's think, if I've set the basis that education, financial education works, then so why the need for this committee and task force? Certainly, why isn't it used more, or what are the barriers for making it work? Families are inundated with information on a daily basis. Think of yourself as you go home and look at the pile of mail. It's huge. How do you make decisions about all these opportunities? People with more resources can hire a trusted advisor. Those who are more economically vulnerable, including the elderly, do not have that option and often become the victims of predatory practices. Research shows that many people learn financial management through, guess what, personal experience. Those most economically vulnerable do not have the opportunity to have the room for error to make costly, poor choices in personal experience. They often have to pay for it the rest of their life if they've made a poor choice. We've recently seen that with unscrupulous action in the mortgage industry. Financial education can help prevent these painful experiences from ruining their financial future. Another difference that challenges us in the area of financial education is the difference between providing information and education. Oftentimes, people think if we just give them information, they'll make the right decision. But information that's provided in what I call legalese information, extremely small print, and offered just prior to signing the line is not education. And I often question it if it's information. If it is information, it can be poor at best. So financial education, including financial education truly is providing information, also providing skills to how to use that information, and also understanding what motivates us to make decisions and when we need to use that. Last but not least, let's think about what we're fighting against. There's a wonderfully funded entity in our economy, and that's marketing. They do their job well to understand what will make us want to buy. We have this logo in our head from wonderful marketing that says, we deserve it. And not only that, we deserve it now. We don't have a great marketing engine that says, you should buy it after you've saved enough money to pay for it. So we're challenged by a very well-funded industry that is kind of counter to what we believe in financial education. So we know financial education works. We know there's many challenges. What can we do to close that loop and make it fit for those who need it? Those who work in this arena need to work together. Resources need to be used wisely and efficiently. There are a plethora of financial education products. Many of them are under the auspices of actually selling something. And we need to replace those education products that sell to those that truly provide families with information they need to make the best decisions for them. We don't make it for them, they make it for themselves. Practitioners also need to communicate to those who make decisions about things that they see in the community that are unscrupulous practices. We need to let folks know who make decisions when things need to stop that are really unethical. I think we've done a pretty good job. We have folks in the room that try to do that on a daily basis. But we need to think about those who are most vulnerable, those who are starting their journey of financial management, such as young couples, or those new to our country, just experiencing this wonderful place to be, but being challenged by our money system. We also need to watch the elderly, for they don't have much time to make up for poor choices. With the resources we have, we need to use them effectively and efficiently. I've worked with a team where I've seen banks, credit unions, foundations, nonprofits work together for some really creative things, and this task force can really build on that. And finally, when we work together, we know that financial education will create families who can cash flow, have money left at the end of the month to build assets in homes, businesses, and education. That in turn translates to citizens who can contribute to their neighborhood, community, city, and state, both economically and civically. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the witness? All right. Thank you very much, thank Professor. Next, Deacon Jim Meyer from the Cathedral of St. Paul. Did you walk or did you drive?
I got to admit, I drove.
All right. Some of the sidewalks are scary. Deacon, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Deacon Jim Meyer from the Cathedral of St. Paul. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and privilege for me to be here and discuss this issue with you a bit from my perspective. By way of background, before being ordained a deacon 6 years ago, I spent 25 years in the business world, half in public accounting and half in financial and estate planning. So I come at this question from maybe a little different perspective from my business experience as well as my spiritual life. This bill is, as I see it, crucial. As I look at the people that we see every day, people that come to up the steps of the cathedral looking for help every day. There's lots of traffic, people needing financial help and lots of other help. But on the financial side, we've had a doctor bill come in unexpected. Can't pay my rent. We're going to get evicted. And there's so many people living right on the edge that one unexpected thing that happens to them and they're way back. They've made some progress and they go way back to the beginning. I had an experience this week that is a perfect example of the need for this legislation. There's a young family that we've been helping out for a while. Mother's 29, father's 28. They have five children, ranging from 13 down to 1.5. Just within the last couple of months, both husband and wife just obtained their GED degrees. So they're trying to struggle their way out, and they've been now become enrolled in some educational courses to become a medical assistant in criminal justice for him. And they're starting to make a move forward. And I learned this week that they've been driving around without car insurance. I said, you have to have car insurance. It's illegal for one thing, and if anything happened, there goes all the things you've worked for to this point would be gone. And she said, well, we got all these bills. We either don't pay for books, or we don't pay for food, or we don't pay for something. We made that choice. And part of that was simply they're so living on the edge that any unexpected bill that comes up, it knocks them way back. But as well as the whole literacy of making financial choices, they just really are not in a position to be able to understand some of these questions. It was like, well, I'm going to pay this or this, so I'm going to pay this. And even the thought of going to buy car insurance was so confusing for them that deductibles and copays and this and that, they don't know how to make any of those choices. In a similar way, they faced an issue just within the last 2 months where their refrigerator broke down in their house. And they went to their landlord, a Section 8 landlord, and the landlord said, it's not my problem, it's your problem. He said, look at the lease. So they pulled out their lease, and the landlord had inserted a clause to specifically exclude anything resulting from the refrigerator. It was an old refrigerator, and they read me this clause out of their lease, and I said, well, that's what it says, that's what it means. And she said, we just didn't understand what it meant and how to deal with that. So, you know, there are just tons and tons of folks just like this family who are working so hard to try to move out of their situation, and there is just no support. Family has no relationship with grandpas and grandmas because they were abused when they were children, so there's no place for them to turn, and one wrong move or one bad decision just takes their schooling, goes right out the window, and their opportunity to move out of this is killed. So we see examples like this all the time, people that come to our doors every day. It's been overwhelming for us at the cathedral just trying to see all the folks that come to the door. We've enlisted the aid of Sharing and Caring Hands to help us with the volume is just too great for our staff to deal with. And I also serve as a chaplain for a homeless shelter, a Catholic Charities homeless shelter for alcoholic men. And visiting with those guys, they have similar issues, similar things that there's one event that happened in their lives and had a little savings to get over that one event, it might not have pushed them to the point where drinking was back. I'm going to go back to drinking again because I can't deal with this stuff. I lost my truck. He was a truck driver. And when that went away, he went back to drinking again. So there's just, we see this over and over again, and the need to have a little bit of funding set aside to deal with the unexpected thing and have a resource of teaching and training about how to make financial decisions about borrowing, buying, renting, saving, spending, all those things which seem common sense to many of us are not common sense and creates difficulties for lots and lots and lots of folks. So we appreciate your support of this bill and encourage its passage.
Thank you, Deacon. Last testifier is, I'm going to get this one wrong as well, I'm sure, Ms. Amy Brennanson.
Oh, it's Brennan again.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Norwegian.
certainly is. Ms. Brendan, welcome to the committee, please.
Thank you very much.
Are you a teacher or, you know?
I'm a visual learner representative, Mahoney.
Thank you so much.
If you would identify yourself for the tape, please.
Wonderful. Amy Brennan-Ginn. I'm with the LCC Office on the Economic Status of Women here at the State Legislature. And thank you so much for hearing this bill. And I have to begin by thanking Representative Lanning for bringing this forward. Our office had the wonderful opportunity to collaborate with the Commission to End Poverty and got to know many of the members and go on the tours. And it's really very rewarding to see some action come out of what the commission has done. So we're grateful for that, and also grateful because one of the things that we saw when we traveled with the commission was that the face of poverty and the people who were testifying or sharing their stories with the commission were often the face of women. And it's particularly important to our office on the economic status of women that we work to find ways that we truly can help women advance economically. And there are a couple of pieces of this bill that really speak to that. First of all, addressing predatory lending is critical for women, particularly elderly women. Our office has been a part of a collaboration that's studying the economics of older people in Minnesota. And one of the things that we've noted about older women, the median income in retirement for women in Minnesota is $12,691. It's compared to $24,000 for men. And the bare bones budget that this collaborative has put together states that it costs about $24,000 for housing, health, and food, and a little else to get by. Our work with this index also showed us that even those with retirement incomes that include personal retirement accounts, private savings, and pensions may fall short of economic security, and that that problem is the most severe for single elder women. We have concern because predatory lending truly preys on these women. I'll just share a few statistics with you from HUD. HUD reports that predatory lending does fall disproportionately on older women, on women and minorities. Some of the statistics that I'll raise: African American women were 5.7% more likely than African American men to receive subprime mortgages. Latino women 12.7% more likely than Latino men to receive subprime mortgages. And white women were 25.8% more likely to receive subprime mortgage purchase mortgages than white men. When we look at African American women compared to white men, we see they were 256 times more likely to receive bad mortgages, and Latino women 177%. So these are startling statistics about predatory lending and its impact on women in general and women of color. But I think the other part of this bill, which is particularly exciting, is that it focuses on some positive elements like financial education and asset development. I'm thinking about the FAME program that you started, that we started the testimony with. And one of the wonderful things about the FAME program is 78% of the participants in that program are women. And as we saw in the example we just heard, often when you give women the tools and the information that they need to be financially savvy, they will become that over time. I think also, too, that often when we think about poor women, we think about a single mother with children, and there's a sense of pity almost. But what we know, and again, echoing on what Representative Lanning said, that many of these women want a hand up, and they need the tools to take themselves to the next step. I think we don't always see the power and the promise of poor women in our state and in our country. And I always think about the Grameen Bank model, the international bank model that many of you know about, and just a reminder of how that model began. That model began, Muhammad Yunus started that model in 1976 in Bangladesh. He began the successful Grameen Bank model by loaning a small group of poor women $27 so that they could create small items for sale without the burdens of predatory lending. Grameen Bank now serves 6 million borrowers. 96% of them are women. The number of borrowers in this program will reach 12 million by the end of this year. So I believe strongly in this bill, not only as a way to address some of the disparities and inequities, but also as a way to really celebrate the power and promise of what happens when you give women the tools to succeed. So thank you for considering it and bringing it forward.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. Representative Lanning. Are there any questions for any of the testifiers from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Lanning, any closing statements?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for the opportunity to present this bill to you. Let's not let the commission report sit on the shelf and collect dust and have nothing come of it. We as individual legislators can, of course, take any of the ideas there and introduce legislation. I have done that. I will continue to do that. But I think, having been through this experience, if we have a bipartisan group that comes together to study these issues, come up with recommendations that maybe we can encourage individual legislators to pursue, I think we can make a difference here. And so what this is all about is having us come together in a bipartisan way to study ways in which we can help achieve this goal of eliminating poverty in Minnesota. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. With that, Representative Murdoch renews his motion that House File 2062 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Congratulations, Representative Lanning.
Thank you.
Members, staff has pointed out that we have two sets of minutes to approve. The first one from our May 11th, 2009 hearing. Representative Sanders, would you like to move approval?
It would be an honor, Mr. Chair, to move those minutes.
Thank you. All those in favor of the motion to approve the May 11th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And lastly, the minutes from our recent joint hearing with the Housing Policy and Finance, Public Health Finance Division. Representative Loon, would you like to move approval?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Loon. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, members and to the public, at this time we are not scheduled to meet next Friday. Please keep an eye on your email. You never know. With that, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very much.